Hi, Ken here. In nearly all of our podcasts, you hear students asking questions and their interaction with me. Many listeners find these exchanges illuminating because what is being asked is often exactly what is on their minds. If you find these conversations helpful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can maintain and expand our website. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind, Making Things Happen, Part 3.
This is Part 3 of Living Awake, Making Things Happen. Please note, due to technical difficulties during the recording session, there is static and distortion in small segments of the last 15 minutes of this podcast. We appreciate your understanding and apologize for the inconvenience.
Now we turn to Part 3 of Living Awake, Making Things Happen. This section is called, Where Do You Go Now? So, we want to take a look, a closer look at what do you want to make happen? And this first section is based on a tool that was developed by a colleague of mine, a woman called Kevin Kreitman. The reason she's called Kevin is because she was originally going to go into music, and her mother did not want people hanging up not calling her because her name was a female name, being a very chauvinistic business back then. So, but she's had an interesting life, including driving trucks, running a trucking firm, getting a PhD in mathematics, and coming up with what I like to call the Kreitman uncertainty principle, which states you can control. If you control the process, you can't control the result. And if you go for the result, you can't control the process. Which is a good thing to keep in mind. If you control the process, you can't predict what result you're going to get. If you go for a specific result, you can't control the process. You've just got to do whatever it takes to get there. Yes, but it's universally ignored in business. People want, well, I want to get there. Well, you'll have to do X, Y, and Z, but I don't want to do that. I want to do it this way. Well, then you're not going to get there. No, I'm going to get there doing that. Okay. So, I'm going to do this in groups. Again, because I think it'll be the best way. And the process here, there are a number of different ways you can get at this, but the crucial distinction is between what you actually want and what you're asking for. So, for instance, a person may say, I want more free time. Okay? Anybody here in that category? Yeah, want more free time. That's what you're asking for. But what do you want that free time for? You have a microphone there? If you're game for this, Christina? It's on?
It says it's on.
Okay.
Oh, I have a long list of things I like to spend my time doing. Thing that I was using today that I would like to accomplish is I would like to learn to play the piano.
Okay. So, there you have the distinction. I want more free time. That's what I'm asking for. But what I actually want is to learn to play the piano.
Yes.
Okay. Now, we could go further and say, why do you want to learn to play the piano, etc. And I'll get to that one in a minute. But you'll see that there are two other questions here. How can you get what you're asking for without getting what you want? Like, here's all the free time, but now you have no piano or something. Or you discover that you make the free time and...
You still don't play the piano.
And you still don't play the piano. Okay?
Yeah.
So that shows how you can get what you're asking for without getting what you want. On the other hand, Diane, yes, you have a question. Could you pass? Thank you. We have another mic here, so.
I'm thinking back to when you went to New Mexico and to write a book.
Yeah, that's a very good example.
Okay, and you didn't write the book, but you had another insight. So the situation was not wasted. You got more information.
Yes, because I made the effort. But I got what I wanted, which was the free time to write the book, but I didn't get the book done. So what this reveals is that free time or lack of time wasn't the problem. And a lot of the times we're thinking, oh, that's the problem. So that's what the second question goes to. How can you get what you want without getting what you ask for? Well, are you currently taking piano lessons?
No.
Maybe you could start.
That's right. I do have a piano. I got that far.
You got a teacher right back there.
I'm in San Diego, so no, you're right. There's, there's another block, obviously, because I find time to do all kinds of things in my life that don't even really need to be done.
Right.
So that's what we were talking about here: is what is the block? What's the obstacle?
Okay. And there's two ways we can go with these things. One is to be clear about the block, and the other is to be clear about our motivation, about what we really want to do. Because another way of looking at this is, for whatever reason, learning to play the piano isn't very high on your priorities.
Because if it were high on the priority, I would be doing it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And when we're establishing priorities, it's very good to look at what we do, yeah. Not what we say.
When Linnea said the thing about not knowing the value system or struggling against the value system, that's what came up for me very strongly with this. Is I think that's what I want to do, but I'm not doing it, and somehow it doesn't feel right to be doing it or okay to be doing it.
Ah, so that opens up a whole nother...
It's a big mess.
Yeah, okay. But you get the picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So is everybody clear about this distinction between what you're asking for versus what you want? So what I want to do is to break up into groups and actually focus on that. Going through the same process, there are two techniques. You can just leave it on, just... because otherwise it crashes. There are two techniques which I found helpful on this, and there are probably more. One is to make this distinction and ask those two questions. How can I get what I'm asking for and not get what I want? It illuminates a lot of possibilities. And how can I get what I want without getting what I'm asking for? And that often opens up more possibilities. The other one is the process that I was just starting with, Christina. It's called the five whys. And you ask why five times in a row. Now, this gets pretty ugly. Hey, it's all terrible, so you might as well enjoy it. You know, because you ask, okay, why do you want to do that? And why do you want that? And why do you want that? And you have to keep going down. Now, by the time you get to the fourth or fifth one, you're usually getting down to some pretty basic stuff. And this is why you find where the real nitty-gritty motivation is. People were talking about squirmy, uncomfortable feelings this morning. Well, you can expect to find some squirmy, uncomfortable feelings here. Now, how do you work with squirmy, uncomfortable feelings? When you work with these five whys, you may come to a point where you cannot answer, or all you can say is, I don't know. But there will be a palpable emotional feeling, which you may not be able to name, but there will be something there. That's where you rest. Just be with that feeling to the best of your ability. Because what we're doing with the five whys is stripping away the layers that keep us out of touch or keep us separated from what's actually going on. And the five whys is one way of getting at it. It's a fairly direct way. So I'm just giving you that. Now, if you're in the role of supporting the person, then when they stop, you stop. You don't ask any more questions. You just be there with them in attention, creating a field which provides the support. So they can actually be right in that experience. When I say be right in that experience, that means rest in what is arising in the body. It may be quite uncomfortable. It may be unfamiliar. It may be pleasant. I mean, there's no telling. A yearning, it may be a reconnection with an experience which you'd forgotten, and just like, oh, there's all kinds of possibilities. But be there in the body, be there with your emotions, or in your emotions. Don't worry about the stories. As I said earlier today, the function of the stories is to stop you from experiencing what's there. That actually is the function of the stories. So don't worry particularly about the stories. Just be in the experience. If you can only be at the edge of the experience because it's too hot, that's fine. That's what you can do at this point. You can be right at the edge. So the process is going to be the person will say, this is what I want. And then one of the other two people say, okay, for instance, you were saying, I want to play the, I want more free time. Then you start into the five whys. Why do you want that? And they'll come up with a reason. Well, I will just take the piano one. Well, I want to play the piano. Why do you want to play the piano? Sure, if you're game.
Because when I actually do sit down in front of it and play, I lose myself in it. It feels okay. Wonderful.
Why do you want to lose yourself in it?
I guess there are two answers to that. One is it feels good, and the other is it is kind of a little bit of an escape.
Why do you want to escape? Well, and just whenever you feel uncomfortable, you can just say,
I'm already
stop
feeling uncomfortable. Well, because, you know, there are some things in life that I wish they were otherwise. And I have a lot of struggles around that, actually.
Okay.
I find a lot of the struggle in my life is from wanting things to be other than what they are. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can ask, why do you want things to be other than they are? You see, this gets quite deep quite quickly.
Man. It was bottomless. I thought you said there were five whys. Didn't you have your five whys?
it's only three so far. Now, there's a feeling there, right? Just breathe and be in that feeling. You don't have to say anything. Be in their body. Be in the emotions. It's probably a little unfamiliar territory. You don't go there too often. What's it like to be right there?
It's not awful. It's not comfortable. It's kind of interesting.
Okay. So this is how you explore unknown territory.
Yeah.
I won't push you any further, but that's good. So you see how the process works. Now, she said it was bottomless. Have you heard about the turtles?
Yes, I know the turtle story.
Okay. You had a question. Can we have a mic here? Thank you, Christina.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is in this exercise is just through Buddhist teachings, I realize that our fundamental, the reason why we suffer or we're uncomfortable is that underlying we all want to be happy. So I can see that the whys are like kind of like get down to the basic of that all human beings are just like me and want to be happy. And so... And the teachings are that it is through our delusions that we reach out for these things that we're not realizing, like I want to be happy. We don't realize that I want to be happy, and so we're searching for I want to play the piano because underlying that will bring some form of, I mean, basically escape and all those things mean that there's underlying all of that is that all human beings want to be happy. And are we stripping away, like trying to notice these delusions that we're grasping after that we think are going to make us happy? I mean, is that where we're going with this, to try to realize?
That may be where some people end up going. I wouldn't say it is going to be, that's going to happen to everybody, because the I have no idea what is in everybody. I think it's, as you say, everybody wants to be happy. Nobody wants to suffer. These are traditional teachings, but all people accomplish is suffering. People aren't very good at being happy. But I find there's a Zen take on this, which is very interesting. If you want to be happy, what assumption are you making?
That we're unhappy.
Yes.
Okay.
Is that true?
Okay. That's what I was trying to get after here. Just because I know, I got the exercise right away, and I, just for my own personal thing, I'm like, okay, well, I know that I search after all these things because I want to be happy, and I already know that I live much of my life in delusions, and so does everybody else, because I've been able to teach myself that the things that other people do to me aren't because they want to make me happy. I'm able to turn it around and say that person cut me off in traffic or that person got angry with me and yelled at me because they want to be happy just like me.
Okay.
And I don't take it personally. So for me, the question was, am I supposed to be like trying to feel what that feels like or
no, you take what you want. And okay. And for instance, you've talked about wanting to establish your career out here. Okay, and so what specifically do you want in that? Because there's many facets for that. It's a very general thing. One can take it down to the very basic spiritual principles as you described, but you can also take it to, what I want is this, because we think this is going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we get into this differentiation between what we really want, which may be a feeling of completeness or engagement. You want to bring your career and your previous experience to bear on your next career. Why do you want to do that? I mean, you don't have to answer me, but that's an interesting question because some people, when they're making a career change, they want to leave everything behind and start something completely new.
Right.
But there's a reason there. And I don't know.
That's why I asked the question. I was wanting to know what I'm, you know, in that level, what am I, because I think what the question is a little bit, what am I aiming at feeling? Okay, I'm starting to understand that.
Yeah. Okay. So it's going to help you, like, what am I really aiming at? Because that's going to be what you want.
Right.
And you're saying, well, it's going to look like this and this and this, but a lot of those are things that you're asking for in the way that I've been making this differentiation.
Right.
And by stripping those away through the five whys, you get clear about what you're actually looking for. And that may make establishing a career here a lot more straightforward because right now you don't know what's motivating you. You get clear about what's motivating you. Then your intention becomes much clearer.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Okay. Any other questions on this before we start?
Are we using the same topic as this morning?
That's what I suggested, that you begin, you use this to work on a concrete thing that you want to make happen. Now you're going to, you may find that, well, that's what I'm asking for. And what I really want is this, but that's very useful. And then just as Diane pointed out, I wanted to write this book. When I found out, well, that wasn't the sort of book. I mean, I had the same thing going on with this one. Years ago, a colleague of mine suggested I write a commentary on the Heart Sutra. And I kept mulling it over and mulling it over. And I felt confident enough and maybe foolhardily felt competent enough. But I was having tremendous difficulty finding my voice. And who was and to find the voice to write a book, I usually find that I have to figure out who I'm writing it for. And I had just begun to get somewhere on that when a friend of mine sent me a pre-published copy of Red Pine's commentary on the Heart Sutra, which is a very, very good commentary. And I read it and went, oh, he's done all the technical stuff and the historical stuff, and he's done it way better than ever I would have done it, because he's a scholar and he really knows this stuff very deeply. I can play. So I thought, now I can start writing, because I'm just going to write. I don't have to worry about doing any of the technical stuff, because I didn't really want to. I don't want to do the research for the historical stuff. I can just refer them to this book or that book or something like that. Now I can write, I can do exactly what I want, is just to take this and write, just go crazy, which is what I did, as you know. and up until I got that copy and looked at that, I didn't know that that's actually what I wanted to do. See, so, and once that became clear to me, I wanted to do these poetic and, crazy logical riffs on the stuff and just drive people nuts. which so far has been successful. And I ran into a friend of mine who practices another tradition. He said, "I got the copy from you, Ken. I can only read this a couple of days at a time." And this person has been practicing for 20 years in Zen tradition, so he knows the Heart Sutra very, very well. Good. But now you can ask, turn around and say, well, why do you want to do that? And that'll take you into a whole other stuff, but you don't want to know that. But getting really clear about what we want to do, I find, makes a tremendous difference in our ability to actually do it. And that's what I'm inviting you to do here. Molly. Microphone back to Molly, please.
I just wanted to clarify for my own reasons. Are we saying why to what are you asking for, or why to what do you want, or
why
both?
Why do you want? and that's going to lead you through probably two or three layers of what you're asking for. For instance, Christina was asking for more. She said, what I want is more free time. But that's, why do you want more free time? So I can play the piano. So now what she wanted becomes what she's asking for, and she has a new.
So it's clarifying. It's just a clarifying thing.
Yeah, it's a way of clarifying, stripping away all those layers of what am I asking for?
What am I really asking for?
Yeah, what do you really want? Yes. Okay. You're already sweating, Kathy. I think that was a yes. Okay. So break up into groups, and we'll go through the same process. You won't need a minute to do this. You just need to say, this is what I want. And the other two people, when you're in the support role, you ask creative questions. I've suggested the five whys. You may find some of the questions that we asked this morning. But just be very creative in your question. The purpose is not to pin the person down, but to help them explore their own experience so that they come to it. Remember to ask open questions, not closed questions. Don't assume that you know what they're saying. You think, you know, are you thinking this, X, Y, and Z? Don't say that. Say, what do you think about this? And so you're coming from them. So it's really a supportive role, and it's very good to learn how to do that with another person, because through that, you may actually learn how to do it with yourself. Okay? So break up into groups, and we'll do this. You've spent this time exploring what you really want, not just what you're asking for. Now, don't need to go into what you came to. What I'm interested to hear is, what was this experience like for you? What words would you use to describe it? A microphone, please.
I feel squeezed.
Squished. Some English words really work, you know. Squish. Microphone over here, please. There you go.
Primitive. Primary process, if you'll excuse the therapy language there, but primitive.
Primitive.
We'll cover it.
Okay. Anybody else?
Revealing.
Two or three more. Linnea, you've got a mic back. Oh, Randy and then Linnea. Right behind you, Randy.
Feel empowered.
Empowered. Oh, we love that word, don't we? Okay. Yeah, can I hand that back to Linnea, please?
Heart opened.
Ah. Open heart. Connected was another one. Okay. Clear. Vulnerable, was it? Vulnerable. Okay.
I have a word I want to share, but I don't know whether it's allowed, and that is busted.
Busted. Okay. Do you feel more or less alive? More alive. Do you feel more or less awake? Okay. So this is always available to you. This is always available to you. You can actually do this with yourself. But we don't most of the time. Right? We live in sleep. So one of the things that we've gone through this a couple of times with some of the other exercises, but we create these exercises and they have this effect. It's not magic. It's not a mystery particularly. What we're doing in these exercises is creating an environment in which there is greater attention, in which the energy that is normally dissipated in thinking or distraction or indulgence or daydreaming, etc., the energy that's normally dissipated in that is brought to bear on your own experience and what you want and what is important to you. And we have a couple of other people helping you, but primarily they're helping you bring your attention to that. And the result is you feel busted, which is one way of saying you see how you've been being dishonest with yourself, squished, challenged, pushed in ways that take you out of your comfort zone. Not totally a bad thing, is it? Okay. Primitive, like, this is really basic. In the, fundamental stuff. This, we're not dealing with, abstract things. Like, this is very raw and real. Revealing, so new possibilities opening up. Empowered, and that's not coming because somebody says, we give you the authority, or, you're a good person. It's discovering the power that is present in knowing itself, which is very different. Open heart. Same kind of quality as this, the naturally open heart that is actually always there, though we don't always let ourselves feel it. Follow, Linnea? Okay? Connected. We go through this life thinking that I am a separate entity, and there's other separate entities out there. But here we create this experience, and there's a feeling of connectedness. There's less separation. Clear. Again, that's simply a product of raising the level of energy in our attention. So we rise above, aren't distracted, or our experience isn't as distorted by all the usual projections. And so we just see more clearly. And vulnerable. Like, okay, that's very much connected with the open heart. Like, we're just open and ready and able to receive what's there. All of these are descriptions of qualities of being more awake, more alive, and it comes from relating directly to our experience through awareness, not through our intellect, not through concepts, not through all of that stuff. It's very immediate, it's very direct, and it's what Buddhist practice is actually about. Okay? Now we go a step deeper. This goes back to a question, more squirm factors here. We're basically working with three sections questions here. First one is just what we dealt with, is what do you want? We need to be clear about that. The next question is, what do I stand for? What are my values? And we've touched on this already, and the notion here is to know what our values are. In fact, look at what we do, not what we say. And so you might jot down on a piece of paper the values that you think that you live by. They're the ones, they're sort of the ideals out there. So just take a few moments and write those down. Compassion, fairness, justice, all of these great, wonderful ideals. You can see where this is going, can't you, Carolyn? The door is right there. Okay. Okay. Now, in a column beside that, Yeah, I'm always reminded of the Peanuts column. Lucy says to Charlie Brown, "Charlie Brown, I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to tell you everything that's wrong with you. Get a piece of foolscap. Draw a line down the middle. On second thought, get two sheets." So draw a line down the middle. But, you know, so you make second column here. Look at your life. What are the values that you actually live? A friend of mine had a very bad accident and had to have emergency surgery. And he was incapacitated in hospital for a while. And he thought of one person in his life who would have the time to attend to him in hospital. But that person happened to be planning to do a one-month retreat. And he wasn't happy about that. What he overlooked was that he had a tacit assumption with everybody else in his life, and that was that earning money was more important than attending to a friend in hospital. And that's why he wasn't asking any of them, because they were all busy earning money. That's a lived value. Which is more important? What do we actually live by? You follow? Now, when it comes to making something happen, it's extremely important to know what your lived values are. Because that's going to determine what you will do and what you won't do. I had a young entrepreneur back in a little bit before the dot-com craze as a student. And he said he wanted to make a lot of money. And I said, so, open a porn site. He said, I can't do that. Okay, so there are limits. I wasn't actually suggesting it. I was throwing it up so that he could see that there were certain limits on what he was willing to do and what he wasn't to do, because he kept saying there are no limits. So it's very important to become clear. What are we prepared to do, what we're willing to do, what we aren't. And this is in the value of this is in the area of values. Now, there's a whole thing we could do on values, but I don't want to go into that. That would take too long. I just want to point out, for our purposes here, the difference between what are called espoused values and lived values. And usually there's a bit of a discrepancy between the two. In Tibetan, we have a phrase, kok jur mepa. Kok refers to what we hold internally. Jur is to what we make public. And a person has reached a stage of understanding, a stage of development in their practice, when there is no difference between what they hold internally and how they live in everybody else's eyes. So there's no distinction. Very, very few people are actually like that. But it's if we do live like that, then we never have any cause for shame in our lives. So it's very powerful. Very powerful. Okay. The third thing that I want to deal with is a little complicated and maybe a little challenging for both of us. You have a chart there Now, see if I can explain this. This comes from the observation that we, each of us operates in different ways. The language here comes from a person called W. Lamb, who's now out, has been out at Claremont. He's very old, and it comes through movement analysis work. And he was able to determine all of this simply by watching a person move. And he was extremely accurate. But these are the things that we are able to do, and also how we make decisions. And everybody's a little different. The main point of this is for you to become clear on how you yourself operate, not with a sense that there's anything wrong with it, because we're all different, but with understanding what you do and what you generally don't do. Because if what you want to make happen involves doing something that is not naturally part of your repertoire, it's going to be very difficult. For instance, there's one thing I'm just really not good at. That's being a salesman. You know, I was involved with something or other, and I had to make a presentation which involved a sales component with a focus group and with a couple of other people, and they did fine. And after we three of us sat down, there was this silence, and then someone said, "Never let Ken do sales." And that was, which is fine. So this is based on three steps that are involved in doing anything and making anything happen. The first is to attend. And we'll be going into this in much more detail in the last section of our workshop. The second is to intend. And the third is to commit, which in this case means do. Attend, if you want to put it in simpler language, is basically gathering information, doing research. But that can be done in a lot of different ways. It may be attending to your own situation. And so we often do that in meditation. We just sit and we experience. That's a form of attending. Intending arises when we have a certain amount of material. We know the situation somewhat well enough, and now we're deciding to do something. So we're forming an intention. It has to do with motivation. And then committing is how do we actually do it? Now, you'll notice that there are these pairs. The first thing I'd like you to do before we go into the pairs, and these describe different ways of doing each of them, is to consider attend, intend, and commit. And I want you to put a number between 1 and 100 in each of those squares, and they should add up to 100, i.e. they're percentages, which is your own estimate of how proficient you are in each of those. How good are you at attending to the situation, gathering information, investigating, exploring, all of that kind of thing? Some people are great at it. Other people are terrible at it. How good are you forming an intention, getting clear about a direction, and so forth? And how good at doing things? So give yourself a rating. They should add up to 100, so the percentage. Yes.
Is this based on what we want for this issue, or is this in life in general?
Life in general. This is how you operate. Because as you suggest in your question, Carolyn, there are some people who, they can be extremely functional until they get into another quarter of their life, and then all of that function goes up. That's because there's some kind of reactive pattern operating, which cuts them off from all that natural ability. So, Randy, microphone, please. Do you have a mic anywhere?
One.
Okay, thanks.
I'm confused. A normal state of affairs for me. These are three separate dimensions.
Yes.
Why would they add up to 100%?
Because we're usually stronger in one than another. So it's just a rough self-rating. Okay, so everybody got some numbers there. This is basically you're just getting a self-portrait here. There are no gold stars. Okay, now we're going to go through each of these pairs. Now you see at the top of the chart it says assertive and perspective. That's Lam's terminology. One way of thinking about it is particular versus global. So the assertive side would be investigate. That is, you get right in there and you find it. Think of the accountant finding where the financial discrepancies are. Whereas exploring is when you stand back from that and you're looking at the bigger picture and you're just, where does this go and where does this go? You don't know where the territory is. You are not necessarily looking for something particular. Okay? Which one do you give yourself a rating? These should, again, other numbers, two numbers, which are percentages, add up to 100. What percentage do you do investigating? What percentage do you do exploring? You know, for myself, in this, I'm much more likely to do exploring than investigating. I'll only investigate when I have to do it, when I have to find something particular, like I'm making a deposit and it doesn't add up, and then I will go and actually look for where the problem is. But the rest of the time, I don't do very much investigating. I'll just explore ideas and see where they lead and what comes up from that. Whereas other people I know, they will start with an idea and they'll want to know, where's that little bit? And they'll go and find that little bit, and they'll go and find another little bit, and they'll really get right down to it. It's a much more assertive way of doing things. So give yourself a rating there. Yes. Microphone, please.
We're still adding up for the 100%. What are the percentages we're doing on this?
Yeah, these two will add up by themselves to 100.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So are you like 60% one and 40%, or are you 90% one or 10%? Just to get a picture. And these have to be right to the third decimal place. No. Yeah, this one's assertive, this one's perspective. Because this one, with the exploring, you aren't as focused on one thing. You're taking a larger perspective. You're just going to see where things lead. Okay? And then the same. With determine, it's sharply focused. Or more sharply focused. With this, you're sitting back and evaluating the situation before you form an intention. So it's like, okay, where are we now? And what feels right now? Whereas it's like, okay, I know where I'm going. I'm going to do X. I'm going to do Y. I'm going to do Z. I want this to come about. So you can think of this as like determination, where this is more a constant evaluation and reevaluation that goes on. And we find both types of people. People who are able to form an intention which drives at a very specific result, and that can be very effective. And we also find people who, you know, just keep looking at the situation, evaluating and feeling it their way through, and okay, this is where we need to go now. This we also get, comes up here a bit in a slightly different way. Yeah. Again, you can think of this as more particular, determine as more particular, and the evaluate as more global. So one's going to be more sharply focused, one's going to be a broader focus. Okay? Yes?
What I'm hearing or what I'm concluding based on what you're saying is that, like, for instance, to be more determined would be more kind of concrete mm-hmm. thinking versus a more creative type of a feel for evaluate.
Yeah, that's basically how I understand it, yes. And then you come over to committing. This one is about timing. First one, you're very clear about timing. Adapt may or may not be the right word here, because this is Lamb's actual wording is timing. Yes.
Would that fall into the category of scheduling?
Yes, that's right. And this one is you're not scheduling so much as you're just going to see what arises. And then and you're going to envision a range of possibilities. Yeah, Linnea?
Is there a difference between what I know I do when I'm more present and what I do when I'm operating out of fear because the percentages change?
Well, you raise a very, very important point. When are you more effective?
When I'm not operating out of fear, when I'm present.
Yeah. Some people are actually more effective when they're operating out of fear, but that's usually because they got other stuff running. But in the bigger picture, in terms of staying in balance, we're always going to be more effective when we're not operating out of fear. And so take a look at how you are when you're not operating out of fear, because we want to do this when we're more awake, not when we're more asleep. And that's the idea, because some people can be very, very good at something when the pressure's on, but they're just being driven by their own stuff. It's not really how they operate naturally. And so they could never be awake doing that. Okay? Basically, when you're doing stuff out of fear, you're usually in the animal realm. Sometimes in the hell realm. If you're doing it out of envy, then you're in the Titan realm. And you and these all of those reactive emotional motivations are necessarily imbalanced. Okay. Now there's one more dimension here, which is the last column. And you can just indicate a preference here. Do you do these? Prefer to do these in private or shared? There are certain kinds of decisions that I make where I make them in private. I may spend a lot of time talking with people about getting, in this stage, getting the information. But when it comes to the decision making, what I'm going to intend and then move to commitment, I'll do that in private. And which can actually be very disconcerting to people, because they figured since they were part of the information gathering stage, they should be part of the decision making stage. And then other people, they will think about things very carefully themselves and then want to involve other people in actually making the decision. Or they may want to do it all in private or things like that. So look at this over and see where what you want to do in private and what you want to do groups. And again, there isn't a right or wrong here. This is just getting a picture of yourself about how you actually function. Yes. Sorry.
I was going to ask you to re-explain anticipating.
The way that I understand anticipating, and I will say that this way of thinking, which I'd come across before, but I'm still really just assimilating, is, and I think in retrospect, probably adapt is the wrong word there, so you maybe cross that one out. Did I put adapt in there or just timing? Yeah, because I think it's more along the schedule versus the unscheduled. So in this one, since this is the global or the perspective one, it's like you're going to stand back and try to anticipate things rather than follow a certain schedule. Okay?
Ken?
Yes.
For the last column, the private versus shared, are you want percentages again? Like,
well,
for investigate, am I so much percent, so much? So
you could do it with percentages, shared. Or you could do it with preferences.
Oh, just private share, yeah. Private share for each of these.
Each of those things. So you get a picture. And what this is just for you to get a picture of how you operate. I don't want to take it any further than that. But it may be helpful for you to understand how you do things and how you make decisions. I mean, when you look at this, are there any surprises or any points of interest cropping up for anybody? Kathy?
I have to say, when you mentioned, whether I'm acting out of fear or whether I'm doing this in a bit more of a enlightened view, perhaps, or less fear, all my percentages changed.
Yes. So that's a very interesting point.
Yeah.
And so I think next time I do this, we'll do a before and after. Because they really do change. Right. And if we're acting, if we're in fear, we're going to be in one of the six realms and all of that reactivity. Okay. Now, a lot of people, the way they function in the world is they only know how to function when they're driven by fear, which means they don't have a lot of free attention available, and it usually means that what they're doing in the world is fundamentally out of balance, which is why people get health problems and emotional problems, etc. The prospect of doing things awake means you're going to do things very differently, and a lot of things you would normally do because you are driven by fear, you wouldn't. You're much more likely to live the values that you hold when you're not driven by fear. When you're driven by fear, you're much more likely to compromise the values. How many? My favorite movie on this is Thank You for Smoking, which is pure animal realm stuff, because these people, this reporter completely exploits this guy, though it never happens in practice. I mean, that's a Hollywood fantasy. And then he turns around and completely embarrasses her. And what is the excuse they both give? I'm just paying the mortgage. Okay? So human value, human connection, is of less value than paying the mortgage. That's a value system that's being iterated there. This is animal realm. There are a lot of people who live that way. They don't want to live that way. They don't want to think that they live that way, but they do. So let's take just a 10-minute break, and then we'll move into the last section, which is putting everything together.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts.
If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.